live to live righteously.
It's time for another episode of the Cultural Hall. It's episode number 328, where it's all things Manti pageant. That is the Mormon miracle pageant. Maybe that's the reason that it's last year. It's called or nicknamed the Mormon miracle pageant. Joining us, driving somewhere and on an empty stomach, we have the technical director, Doug Barton. Thanks for being with us, sir.
Thank you.
So it's the last season of this, the beloved Mormon miracle pageant down there in Manti, Utah. You are the technical director. It's already underway. You guys have five more nights. Is that what it is?
Yes. So we have our final performances coming Saturday the 22nd.
How long have you been involved with the Manti pageant?
So this will be 50 years. I was technical director. I did the lighting for the first pageant when I was 18 years old. And I'm 70 and I'm doing the last year.
That's a pretty remarkable thing to be there at the beginning and then at the end, which means there has got to be a ton of emotion that's coming at you in anticipation of Saturday night.
Well, I'm really sad to see it go. I mean, it's a part of our life. It's part of our summer. It's part of our family. I have 8 children and 17 grandchildren, and the grandchildren that are old enough are involved, and all of my 8 children have been involved either in the pageant as cast members or on the technical crew doing spotlights and whatever else needs to be done.
Let's talk about the history of it for you. You said you did the first one when you were 18 years old. How did that happen?
Well, I was good friends with Helen Dyring, who was asked to be the director of the Pioneer pageant that the South Sand Beach State Presidency had asked her to be in charge of for the 23rd of July back in 1967. We'd done quite a few things together, and I did technical theater when I was in high school and at Snow College. And she called and asked if I would help her with this little pageant they were going to do in the fairgrounds. And I agreed to do that, and here we are now.
So originally it wasn't even at the Temple Grounds, it was at the fairgrounds down in San Pete County.
Yes, the first year it was performed at the San Pete County Fairgrounds. We did have one scene on the west slope of the Temple Hill, which you can see from the fairgrounds, which is about a little over a city block away. And they had two scenes portrayed there on the temple grounds. Everything else was in the fairgrounds arena.
Doug, you and I may have jumped in a little bit ahead of ourselves. For people who don't know what the Manti Mormon Miracle Pageant is, tell people what it is.
So the first program was taken from a little booklet that Grace Johnson wrote and did traveling lecture for many years, called The Mormon Miracle. It's a small little pamphlet. Talks about the history of the Mormon pioneers moving to the Great Salt Lake Valley and into the San Pete Valley, where the pageant is performed. Also talks about coming forth of the Book of Mormon and early church history and the plan of happiness. And so that booklet was used as the script for the first production, and then in 1970 it was professionally reproduced into an audio track written by Maxine Rux, and that's basically the same program that we've been using since then.
So if I'm understanding, and just to kind of speak back what you've said, the first year it was sort of a different thing, and then since 1970 to where it is today, now 49 years later, it's been essentially the same audio recorded program?
Yes. The program was professionally recorded by Bonneville International in Salt Lake, and we're basically using the same tape, which has been digitized since then, but the same basic tape that was originally produced in 1970.
So what was it like for you being involved? I mean, you said originally, you know, the first year, to then have it be brought back again the second year. Was that always the intent, that it would be a yearly thing and that you would be involved, or how did that happen?
Well, it's my understanding that it would be a one-year presentation, and the next year we'd probably do something else if we did anything at all.
Mm-hmm.
And I was impressed with the script, a great story. It was well done, and personally, I wondered, you know, would anyone come to see it? And we were really amazed, at least I was, to see almost 2,000 people in the Fairgrounds Arena, which was near capacity, and they watched that first performance, which, by the way, was almost rained out. And that was kind of one of the first miracles connection with the pageant.
So you can't say something like that and not have the follow-up question. What other miracles have you seen in the past 50 years?
Well, as I mentioned, the first year, in July, we have a lot of these tropical thunderstorms that will move in, and it rained pretty much all day on the 23rd, and that was the night of the performance. And we wondered if it would be okay to move forward because it had been raining, and we said, no, we'll have faith. We'll go ahead and do that. State president gave the invocation, commanded the elements to be stayed, and they were. It was storming all around the fairgrounds arena and the temple grounds, but not one drop of rain on the performance. In fact, overhead we had blue skies. Right after it was over, everything moved in, and the people going to their cars were drenched in rain, and all of my equipment was as well.
Oh.
That was kind of the first miracle of many that we've seen since then, at least from the technical aspects. You know, I've seen a lot of things happen that were out of our control for sure.
Are there other miracles along the way? Maybe pick up another one that you could share with us, either things that you've seen with the actors or with the community or things that you yourself have experienced?
Well, we had particularly with the technical aspects, because I do sound and lighting, and we had one performance. It's been a few years ago, probably 10 years ago, somewhere in that neighborhood. I've forgotten. But anyway, we had a problem with our computerized lighting equipment. The church provides the equipment that we use for the pageant, and it travels from pageant to pageant. It's very sophisticated. Our lighting system locks to the soundtrack, and so everything is in sync. And the evening of the pageant, we were booting up the computers because we have a main lighting computer and a backup computer, and we could not get either one of them to boot up. And we kept trying and trying, and it was 9 o'clock, 30 minutes before the show started, and still we could not get them to lock up. We called support back east. They said, you know, honestly, we've never seen this happen before. We don't know what to tell you to do other than keep trying. So as a technical crew, we had a prayer in the sound and lighting booths and kept trying. And we had a visiting general authority on assignment from the church, was there to visit with the cast. And he was asked to offer the invocation on the performance. He sensed that we were having some problems. He mentioned in his prayer that all aspects of the pageant would work properly, including the technical equipment. And the minute he said amen on the prayer, our both computers actually booted up at exactly the same time and were fully operational within about 1 minute.
Wow.
And it was amazing. You know, absolutely amazing. There is no other explanation other than divine intervention on that one.
Why is the Manti pageant so important to people? Why does it matter so much?
Well, I think many people come to see it. I mean, we figure maybe 4 million people have seen the pageant since its early beginnings. That's a lot of people.
Yeah.
But I think more than anything else, the 40,000 plus members of the cast over those years, if no one came to see it, it would still be worth doing it because of the difference that it makes in their lives. It gives them a chance to serve. I know it's been life-changing for me. It has been for my family. I think the thing that I'll miss most is the impact that it has on our young people and all of us, actually, you know, families in the Valley that participate. It's something we look forward to. It's an opportunity to serve people. It's an opportunity to do things together as a family. I was just noticing last Friday the number of families that were up there participating, from the little two-year-olds all the way up to teenagers. Mm-hmm. And it's a great family tradition. They've made it such, and it continues. I think we'll really miss that.
How were you informed about the ending of the pageants?
Elder Rasband of the Quorum of the Twelve made a personal visit to Manti in the tabernacle, and I wasn't invited to the meeting, but talked to those who were. It was mainly the church leaders and the pageant presidency that was currently serving. He just informed them that they had the option of continuing it on a local basis if they wanted to, but for the church sponsoring it as a general church, they were not going to continue to do that. And through meetings that were held and discussions of all the state presidents in the area, it was decided not to continue it because the brethren had decided not to have it performed on temple grounds, which would make it very difficult.
Right. So not only not sponsored by the church, but not in the same location as it used to be, and just a lot of different things. So then how did you find out about it all?
I found out about it about an hour after the meeting because of friends that were in attendance at the meeting. And because of my long tradition with it, you know, they said, you know, we really would like you to know about it. And so we thought about it, and you know, we feel like if that's the direction the brethren want us to go, then that's the direction we will go.
Were you sad?
Oh, yes, very sad. Every night that I see it this year, I think, you know, what are we going to do without this? And it's amazing when you see all the people who come from all over the country, even from foreign countries, and they come up to the booth and say, thank you so much for this. This gives me hope. This gives me a new perspective. This is something that we've planned for years to come and see, and it's worth every minute of it. We'll miss that. We really will.
Is there something unique about, I mean, obviously it's the last year of it, but have you noticed anything else sort of unique as it's in its last few shows?
Well, one thing, our crowds are much larger.
Right.
And we anticipated that because everyone wants to come and see the last performance. And it's amazing, you know, when I go throughout the state and even out of state, and people say, where are you from? I say, I'm from Manti. Oh, the temple's there and the pageant is there. We were there 20 years ago, or we were there 30 years ago. And this year I've heard them say, and we are coming back. Saturday night I had a number of, well, they were young people then when they worked with me that now have families, live other parts of the state and the country, and they've all come back to see the pageant for the last time and to kind of relive their experiences that they had while they were there participating.
Are there concerns about the city? I know that it was a time when a lot of businesses within the Manti city limits would really make a lot of money. I know there were lots of like yard sales and boutique things. Is there some concern about some of those entities?
Well, I think financially it will impact the businesses somewhat. I don't think it'll be devastating. I don't think it will cause any of them to go out of business. You know, personally, we run the radio station in the Valley, and the impact on us is minimal, but the city has built a large sports park that will be in full operation next year. And they didn't do that in anticipation of this change because we didn't know about it, but they did it because it made sense. And with Ephraim's complex and now Manti's very beautiful sports complex, I think that they can recover some of that lost revenue through the sports events and tournaments that will be held throughout the entire summer rather than just 8 days during the pageant. So I think it'll be fine.
I know a lot of the temples across the church are getting renovated. Salt Lake, we've certainly seen the announcement from the headquarters of the church about what it'll look like and how the annexes will be, and that it's scheduled to close at the end of this year. What's the plan for the Manti Temple?
Well, President Nelson announced that Pioneer Temples will be remodeled structurally and maybe with other changes as well. I asked the temple president just a week ago, because we serve at the temple one day a week, and he said we really don't have a timeline. He anticipates that it will come probably after the St. George Temple reopened, after their two-year remodel, and possibly after Salt Lake is completed, but we really don't have a timeline.
One of the things I love about the Manti Temple, having had the opportunity to go in, my brother was actually sealed in the Manti Temple, which I thought was absolutely gorgeous, is that it is truly one of those unique buildings. Can you talk a little bit about the uniqueness of the Manti Temple?
Well, it's an amazing building because I grew up living two blocks away. As a child, I spent a lot of time walking around the temple, riding my bike, and of course with the badge, and now serving in the temple. It's a very unique architecture. It is not symmetrical like most of the temples, with the platform on the west tower and the spire on the east tower. It's absolutely amazing that it could have been completed in 11 years by pioneer craftsmen who had to try and make a living at the same time that they were working on the temple. I think they said the total cost of that building was like $1 million.
Wow.
But none of that was paid in wages, mainly in material. And as you visit the temple, if you've had an opportunity to go in it, which you have and many others have, it has a simple, beautiful look that is just incredible. I mean, it is my favorite temple of all. Of course, I live there, and I would say that. But it really is. Elder or President Hinckley, when he was there to rededicate the temple back in the 80s, he said, this is the crown jewel of the church's temple.
You know, someone may be listening to this, and there's still a few days that they can come down and check out the Manti pageant, the Mormon Miracle pageant. Tell them why they should do that, why they should make the effort. It might be hard for some, might be a drive for others, a late night still for even others. Why should they do that?
Well, this is a historic event. I mean, there's very few things that have been going for 52 years that can have such an incredible impact on your life. And it is worth the drive. It's worth the time. Pageant is a little under an hour and a half long. Starts at 9:30, finishes just before 11 o'clock. They have handle the traffic in such a way that they can move you very quickly in and out. We have 15,000 folding chair seats. You can accommodate crowds of over 20,000. It's probably the most beautiful amphitheater venue for any kind of an outdoor production that you'll find anywhere in the world. The lighting, the sound, the costumes, the cast. We have 1,400 cast members. It's just one of those once-in-a-lifetime events you don't want to miss.
And you've only got a few more chances to do it. Doug Barton, the technical director of the Mormon Miracle Pageant in Manti, Utah, thank you for taking a few minutes and telling us about your experience over these 50 years with the Manti Pageant. Thank you so much, sir.
Thank you.
Coming up in the second half of the Cultural Hall, we are going to talk with Marilyn Jorgensen, who has put together an amazing commemorative piece. It's a book talking all about the Mormon Miracle Pageant. We'll do that coming back in the second block of the Cultural Hall.
Imagine running a small business today. It's challenging. Imaging and internet presence is an absolute must. Even with that, you're still a small star in a bright cyber universe. Now, imagine you have someone who understands how to get your site designed for your talents and then easily searched by potential clients. Imagine Lennon Design. Whether it's strictly a website or a whole package of logo creation, advertising media, and promotional materials, Lennon Design is your partner in business. They'll test the boundaries of their imagination to create something unique for you. When you need creative, affordable design, let it be Lennon Design. Call 801-699-3022 or visit LennonDesign.com.
Dan the Laptop Man here, and it's time for another PC Laptop's Bedtime Story. Once upon a time, Brian was looking for a new computer. He searched far and wide from north to south, and he even took his quest online. But he had yet to find the PC of his dreams and was feeling sad. If only I could find the perfect computer with a lifetime warranty to match, he thought to himself. But then Brian stumbled upon a magical store with a friendly staff and a selection galore. Inside, he knew he had found what he'd been searching for all along, a blazing fast PC with a lifetime warranty his heart had desired. Brian returned home, his new PC laptop's desktop in tow. And should it come time to upgrade, Brian knows where to go. PC Laptops, where we really do love Brian and you. PCLaptops.com.
I want to take a quick second and talk to you about Best DJ in Utah now in its second year. Last year, I went to Washington, to Roche Harbor, and did a gorgeous wedding. This year, I'm slated to go to Moab, to go to Denver to do weddings. And guys, it couldn't be going any better. Thanks in large part to folks like yourself, people who are listening to this and say, you know what, I need a wedding or a mobile DJ for something, and then reach out to me. You can go to bestdjinutah.com. You can find me on all of the social medias at Richie T. Stedman, or you can certainly just send me an email, Richie, R-I-C-H-I-E-T as in tough guy, Stedman, S-T-E-A-D-M-A-N @gmail.com. I would love to see what I could do to make your event that much better. Whether it's a party or the biggest day of your life, you need the best DJ in Utah. And like I said, it doesn't have to be in Utah. It can just be the best DJ in Utah. I don't know. Now we start to get into like the technical things. It's bestdjinutah.com.
The Cultural Hall wants you to help Utah Food Bank fight hunger statewide. Through your donations of food, time, or money, Utah Food Bank is able to distribute over 31 million meals annually to Utahns facing hunger. Even a $1 donation can be turned into $7.35 of goods and services. One in five children in Utah could go to bed hungry tonight, and 423,000 Utahns are unsure where their next meal will come from. By donating food at your local pantry or by visiting utahfoodbank.org, you can make a difference.
Time here in the second block of the Cultural Hall. We're talking with Marilyn Jorgensen, who, if you go to mantipageant.org, scroll down a little bit, you'll see that you can purchase a Mormon Miracle Pageant book. And Marilyn is author, the gatherer, the putter together of that book. Thank you for joining us here, Marilyn.
Oh, you're very welcome. Thank you for asking.
So let's talk there, starting with the book. If people want to remember the Manti pageant and its 50 years of glory, you've put this together. How did that project come about?
Oh, my goodness. Well, I began with a pageant in 1967.
Mm-hmm.
I was in the choir. The first 3 years, there was a live choir and a live orchestra. It was not the pageant form exactly as it is right now. It was just a 24th of July celebration that first year. And it was, everyone said, oh, this has got to go on. And so they tried to get permission to put it over on the Temple Hill and finally got permission to go on the southwest corner there. And it was still live orchestra and stuff. And it was hard because there were a lot of trees there at the bottom and out in the field.
Mm-hmm.
And so people had a hard time seeing. So there's a really neat story about how we got rid of the trees. That was a miracle, one of the miracles that happened. Maxine Rux and Francis Urey came down from Salt Lake to be the narrators that third year because the ones that we had moved away. And when she came, she said, you people just don't know what you've got here. This needs to be continued.
Mm-hmm.
And so they asked her if she would be the director, come down and direct it. And she said only on one condition, if she could put it into true pageant form and do a soundtrack so that the wind didn't blow the sound away. And so that's how that happened. And Maxine was the one who put it into the form. And what that meant was she added the storyline of Robert and Mary, a young couple who go all the way through the pageant and kind of connect everything all together. And then we were able to move and use the entire south face of the Temple Hill as the stage. And so, you know, the process of getting and changing scenery and costumes and all that, this was all just one state. We were furnishing everything.
Wow.
And for the first 25 years, this was our pocket. And so, you know, people have no idea how many thousands of people have worked on this pageant with no recognition. We don't even have names of all the thousands of people who have sewn costumes.
Right.
Still sew costumes, food services. I mean, Manti at that time had maybe, excuse me, maybe 2,500 people.
Wow.
And at that time, there was not even one stoplight in the whole county. Now there are a couple, but neither one of them are in Manti. And we almost have, I don't know, over 3,000 people. So, you know, when we get a crowd of 20,000 people, that's 10 times our population.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
I was going to say, I have to ask you, though, you said the miracle of the tree removal, and then we just sort of moved on. So what was that miracle?
Oh. Well, trying to get permission to move trees, which was kind of interesting because in the early years, there was a rock wall, just like the, you know, out of the leftover stones from the temple. At the bottom of the hill, that was the end of the temple property. And the field out there was private property. There was an orchard of sort, but actually the seating area was a hayfield. And that had evolved from gardens because there were homes along the south side of that block.
Hmm.
I used to babysit over there, actually. And so when they said, well, you can't remove those trees, you know, that's sacred ground, blah, blah, blah. It was kind of silly, but they finally allowed a few trees to be taken out, but you were still having the audience try to peer around trees to see the pageant. They weren't gone until 1972 or something. But Maxine Rux was a great granddaughter of Hiram Smith.
Oh.
And the prophet at that time was Joseph Fielding Smith. And she called him on the phone and she said, Uncle Joseph, you absolutely have to let us get rid of these trees. We cannot see. And he said, well, cut them down. And she said, well, they won't let us. And he said, oh, that's easy. He said, just take them out. And if anybody asks, tell them the three Nephites came and took them. And that wasn't exactly how the process went about. We did get permission, but it was kind of interesting.
That's very funny. That's very funny. I like that story a lot.
So, well, it's in the book, along with the rest of them.
So with you being involved over these years, are these are the pictures that we find within the book pictures that you have taken? They're firsthand accounts or pictures that have been gathered? Or what do we actually find within the book?
Actually, there are many of the snapshots that are mine the first 25 years, but there are others. They had, okay, first let me back up. After I was in the choir that first year and we moved over onto the Temple Hill, I was asked to help them. They said be a choreographer, but at that time there wasn't much movement, so that meant I was just helping them stage certain parts, okay?
Mm-hmm.
But then when Maxine came and moved it over onto the whole entire hill, she had everything was moving, and she added the storyline, as I said, but she also added dialogue for different characters, and she added the Book of Mormon scenes. When Joseph is translating the Book of Mormon, then the scenes that he is talking about are appearing on the hill, and that includes some Nephite stuff, some Lamanite things, a battle between the two, the Christ in America coming, and this sort of thing. And this is what you see while Joseph is translating the plates, mm-hmm. and this is the storyline, okay?
Mm-hmm.
So at that point, then we had dances, and we had the angel choir up on the hill, which evolved from about 50 angels to about 150 angels.
Wow.
And at that point, many of the costumes were made out of bed sheets that people donated, and they were dyed. Of course, the white ones were made into angel costumes.
Sure.
But a lot of the warrior costumes and some of the others were just dyed to make other costumes. People donated old suits out of their husband's closet. They had the front cut off and were added to the back to make tails for breakfast coats for the New Englanders.
Mm-hmm.
Just all kinds of innovations that people have no idea about. And I've tried to tell these stories, and I've got it in different sections so that there's the food services, which is an amazing story, the makeup, which is an amazing story, costumes, traffic control.
That's one of the stories I remember the most about the Manti pageant. We enjoyed it, and the first time we went down, this was probably now almost 20 years ago. We're unaware what it would be like trying to get out of town. So I appreciate that that's included in the book.
Oh, yes. Oh, yes. It took a couple of years. Well, first of all, the first time we had 15,000-20,000 people show up, I mean, we didn't know what to do. And our county sheriff at the time called the highway patrol in Salt Lake and said, we need some help. And they thought, okay, Manti's down there in the middle of nowhere. They sent two motorcycle cops down. And they went back and said, no, you really, they need help.
Yeah.
And then, of course, we had the search and rescue posse that were formed. And so they're heavily involved. I mean, there are dozens. And these guys all do this, you know, after they've had their regular day shift.
Right.
And things like that. So it was amazing. But it took a while for them to realize that if the cars are coming from the north, they need to be parked on the east side of Main Street. And if they're coming from the south, they park them on the west street because you can't cross traffic. Even
right.
with traffic directors, you've got to be going with the flow. You can't cross Main Street.
Right, right. It's such an integral part of the whole experience, and that's what it is. It's just a huge experience as it's coming into its last few performances. What's your feeling?
Well, of course, we have mixed feeling. It's like nobody's going to be parking on my lawn or asking to use my bathroom or borrow orange juice the next morning or what, you know.
Mm-hmm.
But on the other hand, we've met some absolutely delightful, wonderful people, and I don't know what we're going to do. It's going to be sad. I have watched the three performances this past week and shed tears each night. It's part of my family history.
Yeah.
My oldest children were way young, and I was the dance director, as I said, and choreographer for the first 25 years. My children were too young to be in it without adult supervision, and because I was up on top of the hill, and you know, they would have to be a pioneer or something on the bottom. And 1972, I remember I was down getting costumes and checking my dancers, and my two little boys came down, and I said, "What are you doing down here? Get home." And they said, "Oh, it's okay. We're in the pageant." And I said, "You can't be in the pageant." "Oh, yeah. The Jensen family said we could be part of their family. We're pioneers now." And they've been in ever since. And in fact, only when they leave on their mission do they miss a performance.
Really?
When my oldest son got married and moved to Logan, he worked in Logan for the summer. He commuted from Logan so that he wouldn't miss another pageant.
Wow. And that's...
missionaries...
Go ahead.
Go ahead. Well, I've had mothers come to me when I was still directing and ask if they could please just get a cassette tape of the music, of the dance music, to send to their missionaries because they were so homesick.
It's
and
such...
then after that, then I was in the costumes for 10 years. And then they asked me, I thought I retired, but you don't retire.
Nope.
From the pageant if you live in Manti. So then they asked me to be historian, and I began gathering. And the first thing I did was do videotaped interviews of probably about 50 people, many of whom are now gone, of people who have been involved in pageant for ages and ages. And so when I started doing the book, okay, the pageant presidency asked me in 2014, they said, okay, we've got our 50th year coming up. We need a history of the pageant. And I said, well, don't you want to get, you know, someone who's younger to do this? And they said, well, where do you think they'd go for information and pictures? And I said, well, they can get all the information they want for free, but nobody can have my picture.
Yeah.
So I did it, and I began collecting, and it took me 4 years.
Wow.
Of interviews. And I thought I knew everything because I had been there. I had been part of the costumes. I had served dinners. I had been on the hill all this time. But when I started interviewing people, I realized I didn't know half of what was going on.
Yep.
In any other area. Even the stage crew had all kinds of stories that I had not heard before. And it was just amazing to me. I probably interviewed over 400 people. Besides going through 30 or 40 hours worth of the videotaped interviews that I have. And of course, in the later years, in the 90s and the 2000s, then they had photographers. And so I had not only the old box of, huge box of black and white negatives and some colored slides to go through, but I had probably 15 CDs and 8 flash drives full of photos.
Wow.
To go through for this picture. It took, I wrote for 3 years, interviewed and wrote the book for 3 years, and then it took us a whole year with help, because I'm old and I have to have help with the computer stuff and editing, which mostly was my daughter and a sweet neighbor that also has the same degree, helped me format the book and go through all of these photos. Probably, I have no idea, 20,000 at least.
Wow.
Pictures to choose. I tried to get photos from all 5 decades into each section. And for the most part, I was able to do that.
A tremendous...
And so the book...
Yeah, tremendous, yeah. Labor of love and sweat and tears.
That labor, absolute, yeah. Labor, yes.
I
didn't get done.
You didn't get done, yeah. Till...
I didn't get done, and I didn't have it ready for the 50th celebration, but that meant that I could also have an index that included all of the information about the 50th anniversary celebrations that they did, all of the... Oh, it was humongous. They had a lot of special guests, but we had firesides every afternoon, musical groups and performances every evening. We had a huge county celebration to begin with, a special fireside with Elder Ballard, who came down, who, by the way, is a cousin to Maxine Ruck.
Hmm.
And it was just amazing. So I guess I could call it a chapter, but it's actually an appendix to the story.
Talking.
But I have a whole chapter of nothing but notes about the characters and the scenes, and, of course, photos from all the decades in there. And then the behind the scenes with the costumes and the makeup and the food services and all of that extra stuff. Beautiful, beautiful stories. Some very spiritual experiences that people shared. A lot of interesting and funny things that happened.
Do you, let me ask you this. I want you to share with me, if you can, a funny experience and then also maybe a spiritual one, and then we can kind of wrap this thing out. How does that sound?
Sounds great.
So a funny experience.
Oh, golly. let's see, which one would I think is hilarious? One about the warriors. The battle scene between the Lamanites and the Nephites is pretty wild.
Mm-hmm.
And except for Captain Moroni and Zarahemna, none of that is choreographed, okay? It's a brand new thing every night.
Okay.
The kids just go at it. And for years and years, we had an older gentleman who made balsa wood. He went all over to get balsa wood to make all of the weapons because it was lighter weight, mm-hmm. and hopefully no one would get damaged.
Right.
But it also meant that most of the weapons got broken. And so one year, Sister Rux said, okay, if you can't be a little bit more careful and you break your weapons, you're out of this. Okay. Mm-hmm. And so they were very, very careful until the last night. And then, of course, all the weapons were demolished. But anyway, we had a chaperone up on top of the hill that told me this story. He watched all season as... Oh, I'm sorry.
You're fine. Pageant film that You're fine. That's how...
Keeps coming on. Anyway, he was watching these three little Nephite warriors that were just barely... At that time, we had age limits on them. And you had to be 14 to be a warrior.
Mm-hmm.
And so these three little Nephites were just 14, but they were smaller in stature than some of the others. And there was this big 16-year-old Lamanite, and he chose those three to just really pick on during the battle.
Mm.
He gave them a hard time.
Mm-hmm.
Well, toward the end, these three little boys got together, and they got this plan. The two of them kept him pretty busy. The third one battled himself around to behind the big 16-year-old. He took his sword like a baseball bat, whacked that kid in the back of the knees till he dropped to the ground in pain. And then the chaperone said, and those three little boys ran up the hill over the flower beds, shedding their armor as they went, never to be seen of again. Though it was really funny.
True vengeance.
Yeah, yeah.
Now maybe a spiritual experience, something that you could share.
Well, you know, those are really kind of sacred, and I kind of hesitate, but there were a couple that really stand out in my mind. The testimonies that were gained by various performers as they were in their part are amazing, and the ones who listened and memorized the tape, went to seminary and knew everything by heart when they got to those Book of Mormon sections. It was really special. But this one little girl, and I can say that a lot of these really special experiences came from children or the youth, which
right.
I think is appropriate. They're more open, and that happened. But it was raining. Okay, in 52 years, we have performed many nights in the rain. Other times, it's just miraculously appeared with an opening in the clouds right above the temple, you know, right above us.
Mm-hmm.
But it was a horrible storm all the way around it. There have been at least two nights that I know of where the power was out all over town except at the temple hill. This one night, it rained. There was an electrical storm, and it was just awful.
Hmm.
The rain was coming down in sheets and pooling in the little depressions where the light towers are.
Mm-hmm.
And the lightning was striking, and it was getting dangerous for those kids up on the light towers. And so as after the Christ in America scene, which is a little over halfway through, they called the performance and said, I'm sorry, we'll have to finish another time. And so they stopped. But I had three different people who were in that Christ in America scene who were telling me how hard it was raining They could hardly even raise their heads because they couldn't see.
Wow.
And one mother told me that she was, of course, a lot of those are in other scenes also, and so they have other clothing under their costumes. And this one mother had three little kids and had been in other scenes, and she had a, you know, other clothes on. Mm-hmm. And she said having her kids hang on her and trying to carry one of her children up the hill in that rainstorm, all of them soaking wet, she said it was a real tragedy as far as trying to get everybody off the hill. And they had to take their costumes home and wash them and dry them for the next night. But another woman who said she was up toward the top of the hill where the Savior was, and she said, I got brave enough and I put my hand over my eyes and just tried to look up to see how the Savior was doing. And she said he was just standing there doing his part and you know, talking and gesturing to the people and like nothing was going on. And she said it was just amazing because we could hardly see. And so I looked at the date. I knew the date of that closure, and I looked on the program to see who the Savior was that night. And I called him and I said, Rick, do you remember the night that the pageant was canceled because of storm? And he said, oh, yes, it was a really bad storm. And I said, well, how did you manage to do your part? And he said, oh, I wasn't wet. He said, they didn't cancel till after I got back to the costume house. Mm. And I said, Rick, they did. It was raining all during your part. And he said, I don't remember that. He said, I was never wet. And then I have to tell you this one more because it really is amazing, okay?
Yes, please.
I told you we made everything. Mm-hmm. We called it a homemade miracle because it was. At that time, for the first 25 years, the cables had to be strung all over the hill. They were not buried as they are now.
Mm-hmm.
And so there were cables. And most of our, we had a couple of light towers, and they purchased spotlights to run from those towers. But the rest of our spotlights were homemade out of number 10 soup cans that they got from the school lunchroom.
Oh, wow.
Okay. There was a family who was part of the light crew. They spent, I don't know how many days, half of the summer, with an assembly line on their front porch, spraying the cans black, mm-hmm. punching a hole in the bottom, putting in a socket, screwing in a big globe, and then putting a rack on the can and screwing it to a board. And this, we had hundreds of those all over the hill.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, all of those were on 4x6s or 2x4s, no, 4x6s, all over the Angel Hill. And when they turned the lights off to get off the Angel Hill, we had to be really careful not to trip over those.
Right.
Because it was dark and we'd had spotlights in our eyes. You know, it was difficult. We couldn't see. We were just kind of hoping there. Amazing that nobody got killed, actually.
Yeah.
But anyway, after a horrible rainstorm all day long, it stopped just in time for pageant. Doug Barton was the lighting and sound person. And he said he didn't have time to go check all of the connections before the pageant started. So he had high school boys that were on his light crew, and he would send them up the hill before each scene to check a connection and dump the water out of the cans.
Oh.
How's that? Okay.
Yeah.
So it gets to the Angels, and he sent one young man up the, he had to crawl up those 73 cement steps to get to the top of the Angel Hill with a little pin light and looked in the connection box. And he called back down to Doug on the headphone, and he said, there's trouble in here. He says, it looks to me like those fuses are blown. Mm. And Doug said, is there anything you can do? And he said, I don't have time. I don't think I can even change them. Don't have time. Doug said, okay. He called on the spotlight operators and the lighting crew. They had silent prayers, and he says, don't tell Maxine. everybody aim everything you can at the hill. I don't think the lights are going to come on. So the lights or the angels come on the hill, the music, he flipped the switch and all of the lights came on.
Wow.
Everything went beautifully. Went up to check the light switches and the fuse box. Lightning had hit it. The fuses were melted. There is absolutely no earthly way those lights could come on.
Wow.
So, yeah, we've had some miracles.
For sure. For sure. I know that with it being pageant time, that it is definitely a busy time for you. So I don't want to take any more of your time, except to ask you to, if people are listening to this and they have not been to the Manti pageant, or they haven't been for a while, or they come every year, make a plea for why they should come this year in its final.
You know, I was thinking myself as I went the other night, I don't need to go. I've seen this hundreds of times, and yet I had to go because I'm going to miss this. There is a spirit that comes every year, and it doesn't matter. Oh, I am so sorry.
You're
about
fine.
I have three phones to answer. It's kind of, but yeah, it's, they should come. They should feel it for the last time because it's not going to happen again.
Yeah.
And it's, I've had so many people come this year saying, I have to bring my family. My kids haven't seen this, you know, and changes have been made. It's not the same every year.
Right.
There have been a lot of things that have been changed, but still the message is there. The spirit is there. And we're doing our very best to put on a performance that people can't forget.
If people want to get that book, they can go to mantipageant.org. You can purchase it there. There's also a cool commemorative coin. That I think is just awesome for people to be able to check out if you want to remember this amazing part of our culture and of our history, mantipageant.org. Marilyn, I'm going to let you go. I hope that this episode has nourished and strengthened your body, and that if you're not healthy enough to listen to it this week, that you'll be healthy enough to listen to it next week, and that when the time comes, you'll be able to travel home in safety. In the meantime, we'll be saving a seat for you on the back row of the Cultural Hall.
Save me a seat. It's sure to be neat on the back row. We really gotta go on the Cultural Hall show.